The Association of Maternal and Child Health Programs, also known as AMCHIP, is a national resource, partner, and advocate for state public health leaders and others working to improve the health of women, children, youth, and families, including those with special health care needs. Title V is the legislation that provides a funding stream to states and territories for work in improving maternal and child health. It's the longest standing public health legislation in the U.S., and it's the only program focused entirely on improving the health of all mothers and children. So my name is Jessica Steiger, and I'm the program manager for infant health here at AMCHIP. I've also been a birth doula for about 6 years, and I also serve on the board of directors for DONA International, which is the world's largest and longest standing doula training and certifying organization. And I'll ask Amy if you want to introduce yourself next.
Sure. Hi, everybody. My name is Amy Chen. I'm a senior staff attorney at the National Health Law Program's Los Angeles office. And I've been working on advocacy for trying to expand access to doula care since 2016.
Hi, I'm Melinda McMichael, and I work at Haymarket Center. I'm the peer recovery specialist and birthing and postpartum doula here at the agency. And I have been here in this role since May 2019.
My name is Joyce Miller. I work for the Women's Treatment Center as a dual peer recovery coach. I've been in this position for 2 years, but I've been at the facility for 28 years. I always work with chemical dependent women and their children, and doula is another part of my job description now.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. So the focus of our discussion today is really on how doulas can support substance use disorder treatment and recovery. So I want to go ahead and dive right into that topic. And I'm going to start by asking each panelist to talk a little bit about what challenges pregnant people in recovery or who use substances face. And what is a doula's role in supporting women in addressing those challenges? And so I wanted to ask, maybe Joyce, if you'd like to answer that question first.
One of the biggest challenges for me is the stigma. So the stigma that these people have rights and have choices about what happened to them, and they're trying to get better. That's one of the challenges for me, is trying to educate the medical peoples on, you know, they just still deserve same type of treatment as anybody else.
Melinda, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the challenges that you think pregnant folks in recovery face, and what the doula's role is in supporting them?
Sure. So coming from a place of having life experiences in regard to working with my clients, there's a lot of limited options for drug treatment. And, you know, the shame and the stigma from families and providers, there's a lot of concern for the effects of drugs on the babies. From what I've seen, one of the biggest challenges that I've had to face is Department of Children and Family Services. So their biggest fear is DCFS involvement. Is DCFS going to come and take my baby from me? Why should I even try when DCFS is going to come and take this baby? It's opened my eyes to look into educating myself in regard to services that I could already engage my client in, so that doesn't happen, as well as, you know, because there's stigma behind women that are on maintenance for opioid use dependency, which is the scope and population of women that I serve.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you. And it sounds like your role as a doula is there's a lot of gap filling and service connection. Is that right?
Yes. It's definitely my job to like fill in the gaps, to bridge the gaps in regard to services that need to be provided to support the clients with a healthy delivery and a healthy life to have reunification for their families.
Amy, I know this is a little bit maybe outside of your area of work, but just wanted to ask if you had anything you wanted to add.
So my organization does a lot of work on Medicaid and Medicaid access and services. So as I'm sure you guys know, Medicaid is actually the largest source of health insurance coverage for individuals with substance use disorder. As in sort of other areas of health access, Medicaid actually covers more around substance and opioid use disorder and treatment and recovery than many private insurance plans, which is, I think, just something interesting and sort of important to note. You know, birth for anybody can be such a scary and unknown experience. And when it's layered with, sort of other issues around substance use and sort of concerns around, you know, whether or not they're going to be able to keep their child, I think really the sort of holistic support that especially community-based doulas provide can really be invaluable in just sort of helping to stabilize that situation.
Yeah, thanks so much. I think that's a really helpful kind of holistic overview and actually a really great transition to our next question. So I want to talk a little bit about the Doula Medicaid Project. So Amy, can you tell us a little bit about what the Doula Medicaid Project is? And you've talked a little bit about this, but maybe a little bit about the role of Medicaid in supporting people who are using substances or who are in recovery.
Sure. So the Doula Medicaid Project is a project of my organization, the National Health Law Program. We started it in, we've been doing some of this work around trying to expand access to doula care, as I mentioned, since 2016, but we sort of actually launched the Doula Medicaid Project in 2019. The goal behind the Doula Medicaid Project is really to try to ensure that all pregnant and postpartum people who want access to a doula, all pregnant and postpartum people on Medicaid who want access to a doula have them. Our goal here at the National Health Lab Program is sort of the range of doulas for the range of reproductive and sexual health. So we're really looking at doulas, not just for prenatal, postpartum, and labor and delivery, but also doulas for abortion care, doulas for miscarriage, doulas for stillbirth, kind of the range of ways in which a pregnancy can end. I think in the end, our goal with that Doula Medicaid Project is really to try to help support states and other communities that are trying to expand access to doula care and make sure that they really do it in a way that's sustainable, inclusive, and really equitable. Kind of thinking about Medicaid coverage for doula care and just sort of getting something done, that's one thing, but doing it in a way that is really lasting and is really going to be impactful, not just for the individuals who receive the care, but also really a sustainable and equitable kind of career option for doulas themselves, I think takes a little bit more kind of thought and strategy. So I think, I see my organization as trying to help support states and groups that are trying to do that.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's a really, really, the way you finished that, again, a really great segue into this next question here, which is really open to anybody. And I think builds on your kind of comments, especially about how to make this, make Medicaid coverage for doula sustainable, equitable, thinking about a living, making this something that a person could have as a profession and really live on their work as a doula. Joyce and Melinda, if you have any thoughts on really how this is playing out for you all in Chicago and Illinois, and how Medicaid is sort of interacting with the work that you're doing with clients.
Sure. At Haymarket Center, we accept all people, whether they have insurance or not. I work with the moms and the babies here because I'm postpartum doula as well. So when the moms do bring their babies here or home, I show them how to properly parent their baby. I navigate them through services that they need, parenting, step parenting classes. We send them with a child development specialist. So I'm grateful that these services are in place for our ladies that we serve.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Joyce, I'm curious if you have any, go ahead.
Okay, I think that the doula should also, in the Medicaid part, be trained. So we'd be recognized, just like CNA, anybody else. So for that, where when we take license or either get, we can be assured, and then maybe they won't be so reluctantly to not want to cover it. So I think that we should be trained and recognized as a professional. And so the state can, if they have it, you know, so therefore we certify, therefore we can be licensed and people wouldn't have to worry about insurance purpose. Who's going to cover what if something happened? We don't have that.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point. And actually, a couple of the thoughts that I was wanting to share are sort of related to exactly what you're talking about, Joyce. So this is a space where state health departments and Title V programs can really fill in and provide some of that gap filling support. So it can be providing support and processing certifications, can provide training support, can provide funding for training, and fill in some of that space. And I think also in many cases, Title V staff members have the ear of upper level health officials, of state health officials, and these are great people to be advocating to support doula legislation, to be supporting living wage reimbursements for doulas. So I think there's a lot of power that state health departments and the staff in them have to support doula programs and growing the doula workforce in an equitable way and really connecting that into the existing substance use treatment system. I wanted to ask Amy if you had anything that you wanted to add on this question.
Sure. You know, I think I mentioned earlier that my organization had done a sort of survey and series of focus groups with doulas in California. And I think, Jessica, you hit on two of the issues that the report really tries to kind of tease out, or rather that we really tried to tease out in our conversations with the doulas that we spoke with and the doulas who responded to the survey. I think the one issue about licensing, as you said, I think it's really difficult and it's really varied. I think so like some doulas really felt like if we had some kind of either licensing or certification body that we would, that would be helpful for us because it would make us a little bit, just give us a little bit more sort of authority. Like it would make us seem a little bit more, you know, I'm putting this in quotes, like a little bit more legitimate. And at the same time, I think there were a lot of doulas that we spoke with. And I would say particularly, I think especially sort of community, sort of like community-based doula groups and groups that that were sort of providing more community-based doula services had a pretty strong reaction to that. I think, you know, there are definitely, you know, many doula certification and there are many doula sort of training and certification organizations. In fact, as an aside, a couple of years ago, I had a summer intern try to just look up all of the doula training and certification organizations that she could find online. And she found over 100. And I have to be clear, like these were just the doula training and certification entities that had like a viable web presence, right? And so like, of course, there's probably in communities all over the country, sort of smaller, you know, kind of like, you know, sort of smaller, like more homegrown birth sort of support and training groups that I'm sure she wasn't able to find because they don't necessarily have like a nice website that Google is, you know, Google has made accessible. Like I've had conversations with doula groups that have training that is so specific to like their community that I think it can, I think they can really see that being a barrier, you know, and there's also some doulas that do work, that do work and have done birth support work for years and have never been formally trained, right? Maybe they have just had sort of like apprentice, or maybe they've just shadowed other doulas. You know, a lot of the kind of birth support work, you know, for sure the word doula is actually like a fairly more recent term, but like the tradition of like women supporting women through birth and labor, that's been happening like since people have given birth, right? And so I think to some people, I think to some doulas and sort of birth support workers, the thought of licensing it and bringing it into this sort of very, it might not necessarily be like a medicalized category, but it is a more sort of like former bureaucratic category. I think at some level, they just feel like it's not appropriate for the type of work that they do. Additionally, the sort of reimbursement question that you mentioned, Jessica, I think is also a really thorny issue. You know, some of the listeners might have heard of the sort of efforts around Medicaid coverage for doula care and the doula pilot program that took place in New York. And my understanding from talking to some of the advocates in New York is that there was not a whole lot of uptake on the part of doulas that were that signed up to provide the services because the reimbursement rate was so low. And they said, well, if I'm serving these, you know, I have a commitment to serving Medicaid populations and I want to serve this community, but I am not going to be able to feed my own family and, you know, be able to sustain a career as a doula with this as the reimbursement rate. So this has been a really sticky issue. I think, you know, one resource that it might be helpful to share is a report that came out of New York from Ancient Song Doula Services, Every Mother Counts in Village Birth International. It's called Advancing Birth Justice. And one of the things that that the report argues around reimbursement rate is to really kind of try to think about decoupling the reimbursement rate from the way that OBs are paid. And I think one of the arguments that they make, which I think to me was obviously convincing to me as an advocate, but I think also sort of feels to me like a common sense convincing argument, is just to look at the amount of time that a typical OB spends with their pregnant patient, right? So like for me, I've had three kids. I loved my OBs, but my OBs were there for like maybe like the 30 minutes to an hour at the very end, like when the baby was literally coming out, all right? My doula was with me the whole time, right? Like she was with me the whole time. She came to my house before I was even at the hospital, all right? And she was with me while I was recovering after the OB had long since left, you know, the nurses had left. I would have been alone in the room if not for like, you know, the doula who was there sort of supporting me and like trying to kind of help me through those first moments and hours like after birth. And so kind of thinking about the sort of time that the doula spends with a pregnant person versus the time that an OB spends, I think that's kind of one common sense argument that people can kind of think about when comparing the reimbursement rates. And so again, thinking about realistically, a doula who is only having two or three clients per month, like how are we going to be able to make their reimbursement rate for those clients sustainable? Once you have a clear understanding of that, I think it really can become much more clear in like a common sense way. Oh, of course they need to be reimbursed at a much higher rate because look at the work that they're doing for their clients.
That was a really wonderful testament for paying doulas what they're worth. I love it. That was awesome. Thank you. I want to talk a little bit more about really doulas and substance use disorder and recovery. So I wanted to turn back to Melinda and Joyce and ask if you could each tell us a little bit about the program that you're a part of in Illinois to support pregnant women who use substances or who are in recovery. So maybe I'll ask Melinda if you want to talk a little bit first, and then we'll go to Joyce.
Sure. So yes, I work with the Pregnant and Postpartum Women's Program here in Chicago. We work with women that are either pregnant or have had a baby within a 12-month timeline that are on medical maintenance. So it's a one-year wraparound service. So they have access to me for 1 year. Upon enrollment of the program. Attached to those services, we also have a family therapist and a nurse practitioner on board and on staff. I'm the peer recovery specialist and I'm the doula. So I am on call all the time. Right now, I have 21 active clients in my program. I have delivered 7 babies. I have missed 4 births due to COVID restrictions. It's very disheartening for me because I made promises to these ladies that I wanted to fulfill, and I was unable to be there. I love my job. I feel like God placed me here in this role. I didn't even know what a doula was till I got hired for this job, and they trained me and they educated me. And Haymarket continues to train me and support me to be the best me that I could be for my clients. What's really awesome about the services at hand is that they are able to have them for 1 year, which is a great start in their recovery. Not a lot of programs do that, so they're able to keep in touch with me, whether they just do a 28-day program here at our agency and leave, or whether they stay here, do 4 months in treatment, 6 months in recovery home, intensive outpatient services. They still have access to these services for support. And yeah, so that's kind of a little bit about what we do here.
That's awesome. I'm actually going to ask you a couple follow-up questions and then turn to Joyce. I think that's probably the best way to do this. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about any lessons that you've learned from the work that you do. And I just wanted to say, yeah, I agree that 1 year like wraparound period is so important, and that's so unique. That's not something that really exists in a lot of places. So yeah, I would love to hear lessons that you've learned, and then maybe what kinds of challenges you feel like your clients face and how you support them in facing those challenges.
Lessons that I've learned. I want to say that one of the biggest lessons I guess I've learned in this role is that women heal women. I definitely like to take my time out in my role here to, I feel like I say this all the time, if you heal the mother, you heal the child, you heal the family, which is very important for our community. You just start with one person and, you know, you just try to make changes in their life and hopefully you could touch the lives of many families. Challenges. So like I was saying earlier, I think one of my biggest challenges, especially for me in my job, as well as with the clients, is always the possibility of the DCFS involvement. Do you think that DCFS is going to take my baby away? And I can't give them an indefinite answer. All I could do is make promises that I'll be here for ongoing support. And if something does happen along the way, I'm still here with you to help guide you, advocate for you, and I'm not going anywhere. I support my clients through all their DCFS court hearings, regardless of, you know, a relapse, an arrest. That doesn't matter to me. You are still my client and I'm still here for you, because stuff like that is inevitable. It's going to happen, especially now with COVID. You know, a lot of services has been taken away, access, you know, people have been in isolation. I've, you know, had some clients that have overdosed and moved on, pregnant. It's disheartening. So I guess another lesson I guess that I've learned is, you know, nothing surprises me.
I think that, and you touched on this a little bit, but the challenges, especially that COVID has created in folks accessing services, is I think one that we're unfortunately going to be recovering from for a long time. And the challenges I think that's created for folks choosing to enter into recovery or having access to substance recovery services is just really different. Joyce, I'm curious if you can tell us a little bit about, again, a little bit about the program that you work with and lessons that you've learned from your work.
Okay. I've been working with these women for 28 years with just drug addiction, period. The lesson that I learned is that a lot of their uses comes from untreated mental health trauma for our ladies. And they go along with that intersectional oppression, but that's just a way of life. You know, we, particularly Black women, you know, oh, okay, this is what we just suck it up. Postpartum is nothing that you talk about or even what is that? You still have these children, you still got to take care of them, you still got things happening, life just go on. So I think a lot of their issues is trauma, which is called mental illness, which the only way they know how to suppress anything that's going on is just to use. What helps me is that it's always hope. It's always a chance that they can get it this time. This time and stop that generational curse of what goes on. I think that the thing that I missed four births to due to COVID. I had one lady, even though would not leave the hospital until I came. She had no one, and they tried to give her transportation, and she wanted the people to know so bad that somebody was there for her. So I, for to let the nurses and the doctors know she just wasn't a number, I had to come to the hospital. People just needing somebody, just want somebody to believe in them, you know, with nobody else as well, you know.
Thank you. Yeah, that's like the heart of what doula work is like providing, is being there and providing that, really
emotional support.
Yeah, exactly. So true. And you touched on this, Joyce, so I wanted to move us to this next question and ask you if you want to talk a little bit more. You mentioned the stigma related to substance use and some of those intersectional oppressions. So you mentioned, especially for Black women, having to contend with the effects of racism. I wanted to know a little bit about how you think doulas help clients navigate those intersectional oppressions, how doulas help clients navigate the stigma that they might experience and perhaps the racism that they might experience as well if they're a person of color.
Me showing up. I'm a peer recovery support. That means that I once was that person. And they'd be like, wow. You know what I mean? Me showing up. Me showing up and making a difference. Showing that even they don't believe it. You know, life, change, challenge, information. I think people just need to be information. A lot of people think that you use sometimes by choice. And they don't realize the story behind the uses for them to even to be in that particular situation. You don't know the trauma that they had to deal with. And the only way they could even cope and not to lose their mind is to use. So I think when you come to somebody and you see me and I'm Black and, oh, that's all that they do. No, not necessarily. You don't know the history. We have to unravel the past to come to the future to stop the cycle. Like I go to court, some I go and we have European clients and they is not quick to call DCF on them as they are the Black women's. I had a girl that had been using, they let her out the hospital one day. I had to call them back and said, you know what? I need to bring this baby back. This baby is going to withdraw. You know, they didn't even not even check the baby's level. You know, I know it's 3 days, but they let her walk out. They let her walk out with a history, but that don't happen so much for the Black girls. No sooner as the social service notice that they got a case or got been using, they all immediately, we have to leave the baby in the hospital for several days until we can see the baby levels go down and we can advocate that as long as she stay here and get better and she can bring the baby home with her. And that don't all the time happen with the European girls that we serve here. It just don't.
I'm not gonna attempt to understand what my clients go through as a white woman, you know, but I agree with what Joy said, just showing up there for them and supporting them through their labor and delivery process and being there as a voice, because a lot of my clients, you know, have lost their voice. They don't know how to speak up for themselves. They're already so filled with shame and guilt and already are looking at these providers like all they think of me as an addict. And me being able to be there and stand next to them and support them and advocate for them is the most important thing, to be there for them emotionally. I have delivered 7 babies successfully, drug-free. And out of those 7 babies, 5 of them were Caucasian women. 1 was African-American and 1 was Latina. 2 of those babies were taken from DCFS. It was my 1 African-American client and it was my 1 Latina client. Both of them are still fighting for their children. One of my clients didn't come back from that. Once they took her baby from the hospital, she went back out there in her addiction. Why am I fighting? They're not going to give me back my baby. And just trying to reel them in and be their support. I had gone through DCFS involvement with my children. I have 6 biracial children. But again, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I understand what it's like to walk in a Black woman's shoes, because I was raised with privilege.
I mean, I just want to say, first of all, both to Joyce and Melinda, just how honored I am to share this space. Anytime I'm on a panel with doulas, I always have to express how much I appreciate the doulas that I had. Every time I think about my doulas, I actually get a little bit teary-eyed just because of the context in which they were there for me. And so I really think that Joyce and Melinda, you both of you are doing just life-changing and life-saving work. And I just want to sort of get that out there first. The other thing that I wanted to say is that I think as speaking for myself, who's not a doula, who's sort of advocating to try to expand access for doula care, I think the others who are trying to support this work really need to find some ways to support the supporters, right? Doulas are doing all this support for their clients. Like, how can we support doulas to do the best job that they can? And I think in the context of looking at sort of health disparities and looking at sort of, as I mentioned earlier, kind of Black maternal mortality, Indigenous and Native maternal mortality, the rates of people of color in general the rates of maternal mortality and morbidity are much higher for women of color, as we've discussed. And I think it's wonderful that doulas like Melinda and Joyce can be there for their clients and kind of help push back against some of that implicit bias and against some of that racism and stigma. But in the end, doulas can only do so much, right? If they're working within a system where the OBs have implicit race bias, where the sort of health system as a whole is racist, there's only so much they can do against that. And so I think at the same time that we're really pushing for doulas and really pushing for more women to have doulas to help support them through that process, we also really need to be kind of looking on the back end, and trying to find ways to actually mitigate that racism to begin with. I think a lot of the sort of dismantling the racism that comes up in the healthcare system, it's a much longer process and it's much, much harder, than just saying, oh, let's cover Medicaid coverage for doula care. But that is also something that has to happen at the same time. Otherwise, doulas cannot, we cannot be putting the burden of dismantling racism on doulas. It's like an impossible task.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree. I think that system, the system work has to be happening, but we are also still able to provide counter pressure, which is a doula technique, actually. Little doula joke there. Okay, I would love to just conclude by thanking you all for joining us. I wanted to just ask and create a little bit of final space. If there's anything else that you want to add, that you want to make sure that you put out on into the universe here, I'll just.
I've been clean and sober for 28 years. I'm send two productive kids to college, single mom, always worked, always educated myself. And things just happened in people's lives that changed the whole narrative of how they see the world. And they believe that the whole world is like that until they have enough information to let them know that they're not alone. And whatever it was that happened to you to make you think that you needed to use about its other ways, especially now, I think untreated mental trauma caused mental health. Among bringing babies into the world with the chemicals in your body can push that into a whole another level. And I would like for some to look at trauma, to see how trauma affect your mental illness.
I just like to tell the world that people can change, that it's possible, no matter how many years that you have being lost out there in those streets, that people can change. And I'm coming from experience for over a 10-year history in substance abuse, losing my children to the system, and now being able to be a productive member of society, having my son, full-time job, full-time mom, loving what I do and being able to give back and help women who I hope have the same bright future that I hold, that people can change.